Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Charles.
Hello.
And Swara.
How's it going?
And this week, we are going to talk about expectations and storytelling and how those things intersect, like happy endings, character agency, audience reactions, all that kind of stuff. But before we get into that, as always, what have y'all been into lately? What have you been enjoying?
Well, over my recent vacation, I got to read a graphic novel called Low, by written by Rick Remender. Unfortunately, I cannot remember the artist's names, but it's a really great. It's 26 issues. It's about it's in the distant future where humanity has like sunk down to the bottom of the ocean because the sun expanded and the atmosphere has become toxic. And there's like everyone else is basically written off. They're just counting down the days and they're all in despair. But there's this one woman who believes that a probe's going to come back that's going to let us know where a habitable world is. And we can still make it if we just keep trying. And it's the art is gorgeous. It is really rough, but uplifting at the same time.
I've never heard of this, but I'm looking at the art and I'm obsessed. This is so cool.
Yeah, the art is, if you love like really prominent color palettes that just pop and pull you in, it's gorgeous. The writing's really great.
Greg Tocchini is the artist, it looks like. But yeah, really cool line work, really cool coloration. I love this.
Yeah, and it was a really great story. It has a lot of twists. Gets a little almost too convoluted in the center while you're reading it. But then once you get to the end, it was all necessary and worth it and comes off and pays out. And phenomenal read. Highly recommend.
I feel like really ambitious comics often run, I guess, that risk. Like, did you ever read We Only Find Them When They're Dead?
I did not know, but I've heard about it.
Yeah, really cool sci-fi comic. And the whole premise is basically what we consider to be gods keep showing up like on the edge of the galaxy, but they're always dead. And they are these like massive humans, like they're so big that we literally mine the bodies for resources. But the whole thing is like, it's like the title, We Only Find Them When They're Dead. And so the story is about this ship captain who's like, we're going to cross the expanse and we're going to find a live one. But it did the same thing where like in the middle, it gets a little weighted, gets a little like,
where's all this going?
But then, yeah, by the end, brings it back around. And I'm like, hell yeah, that was worth it. Like, that was great. So I'm going to have to check this out. You said it was Rick Remender.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm into it. And yeah, I would recommend if you haven't read We Only Find Them When They're Dead, check it out. It's interesting. What about you, Swara? What's good?
So a film that just recently came out that I've been absolutely obsessed with, Boots Riley's second film, I Love Boosters.
Okay,
incredible. 10 out of 10 masterpiece. Not to give too much away, but it is about this group of mostly black women boosters. And if you know what a booster is, that is someone who steals from a high-end retail store and sells these high-priced clothing to their community for a much lower price. They consider it a form of community service. And the directions the story goes in, the performances, Kiki Palmer, Poppy Liu, Taylor Page, Naomi Aki, Demi Moore, who's in what I think is one of her best roles ever.
All right.
And it is just...
Sounds like a great cast.
Yeah, Lakeith Steinfeld as well, who was also the star of Boots Riley's Sorry to Bother You. If you've ever seen that film, you know what his take is like and his specific take on capitalism and our systems that oppress us. And I Love Boosters is no different. It is such a delightful, wild ride. I saw one headline of a review calling it like an adult Looney Tunes film. And yes, absolutely. Y'all
love
know
that.
I'm a huge Looney Tunes fan, so I vibe with that. But just in general, it's just, I love Boots Riley's films, and he's only done two. And please, if it's playing nearby you, go see I Love Boosters. Please hype this film up. This is like such a cathartic release while watching everything that's happening. It's so good.
Oh yeah, it sounds really good. Yeah, I feel like I literally, even if you just see the poster of this movie, I feel like it conveys the vibe of what this movie is.
The color, so much color.
I've seen so much backlash this year specifically against color grading in film and how it's all become very flat and washed out. So when I saw that poster, I was like, I don't even know what this is, but I'm into it based on the fact that you're committing to vibrancy. So
Exactly.
that sounds like something I gotta go see. And yeah, I
It's
remember
so good.
when Sorry to Bother You came out, and that made a big splash, and people really loved that. So if this is kind of a continuation
Have
of that
you seen Sorry to
trajectory as
Bother
like an
You, Alex?
artist, say again.
Have you seen Sorry to Bother You?
I think like when it came out, like I have
Okay,
not
yeah.
yet.
You
But
remember the
it's but if
twist and
this is like
everything.
if this is like him like or if this is Boots Riley like further exploring cinematography and like pushing what he can do, I'm
Yes.
like, all right, I'm into it. That
Very
sounds
much
great.
so. Yeah, I have to see this film. That's what I was watching, but I just also want to recommend a fantastic book, which, to my knowledge, is only available in the UK. A British-based friend was able to bring it back to me after his trip to back home. It is Ash Sarkar's Minority Rule. It came out last year. Brilliant political thinker. Ash, like, she's a staple of Navarra Media, which is based in the UK. And so much of UK politics really does mirror US politics. And I just, the way she dives into, effectively, to put it lightly, the culture wars and how so many, as Shiva describes them, micro events are bombarded at us to distract us from the real issues of, again, capitalism and how it affects us all. I can't, I'm only like halfway through it, but still, I can't say enough great things about this book. Highly, highly recommend.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. I need to read more, honestly, is where I'm at this year. And I know that Kyle, who is on the show semi-regularly, is gonna be pained to hear that. But yeah, I just have not been committing as much as I normally would to reading this year, so I gotta fix that. So what was that title one more time?
Minority Rule by Ash Sarkar. And also on Kyle. Kyle is the level of reading we all aspire to be
He is
that
a
we will
true
never attain.
inspiration.
So shout out to Kyle.
Yeah. My thing for this week is I went to the theater and watched Backrooms, which will tie into this conversation, I think, a good amount. But it is, how do I put this? Are either of you horror people?
Casually.
Okay. So it kind of it I will say it struggles like many horror movies do in the third act. Doesn't quite land as smoothly as I wanted it to. The vibes through the first like two-thirds of this movie, even through to the end, like the aesthetic of this is so well done, and the technical details are so well done, which like it's a largely the set is just this weird nonsense architecture back room, literally. It's like dingy yellow, dim lighting, ugly wallpaper, and you're still pulled in, and you're still like invested in what is happening in what is arguably the blandest set of all time, like visually. Like, so that alone, I was like, the fact that you were able to make this like kind of boring place that is just off enough to be unsettling and to be uncomfortable, that was really impressive to me. The performances in it, like had a good time with it. I think what is interesting to me, and where this will transition more to the episode, is kind of how the community has received it. Because if you're not familiar, the Backrooms kind of started as an idea. The Kane is it Kane Parsons is his name, I think. It was making YouTube videos about this idea of the Backrooms, and it's this like weird space where weird stuff happens. But then the internet did its thing, where it was like, what if there was lore, and what if there was a wiki explaining the lore, and like all of that stuff is very popular, not canonical to the film. So there was a little bit of, I think, there were some people who did not like the movie because it didn't deliver on their wiki hopes, but the movie was never meant to be that. So I wasn't aware of the wiki stuff. Like, I didn't deep dive it and learn it, so I had zero disappointment in that regard.
Their
But yeah, it
headcanon wasn't
was,
lore.
yeah, it's, man. Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed the vibe and what it was attempting to do. It made a stupid amount of money opening weekend, so I assume that we will get another film, because it doesn't end in a way that puts an end to the universe, if that makes sense. Like, I think that the story they explored is pretty explored with what we saw, but that doesn't mean that there can't be more that they could do with it. And horror loves a franchise, so it wouldn't surprise me if we get more. I guess it would only surprise me in that this is more of that like art house A24 horror vein. It's where it's not like a slasher, which is usually what horror franchises. But yeah, I had a good time with it. Enough that I'm going to tell people like go check it out. Even if you're on the fence about it, just decide for yourself. It's really hard to talk about without like spoiling it, other than that it's weird. And I like weird. I like big swings, and this did both of those. I will say again, third act kind of stumbles. Not everything landed for me, but enough landed for me that I had a good time.
Nice.
And before we get into this episode, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Blue Sky at Gatsu083.
And y'all can find me on Blue Sky at Spider Swars. And please check out my podcast, The Middle Geeks, on the Nerds of Color Podcast Network.
Yeah, definitely. And you can find me on Blue Sky at Most Always Alex. And with that, let's get into it. Let's talk about agency and characters and how we interact with stories. Charles, I feel like you were the one who kind of had the idea for this episode. So if you want to explain the Wuthering Waves thing to our audience
Sure.
at home, so they kind of know what informed this.
Yeah, no problem. Really, I'll try to go as quickly as possible. Spoiler alert, if you play Wuthering Waves, if you haven't done the 3.2 Denia segue story, we're gonna dive into it real quick.
Skip ahead like
So
2 minutes.
during yeah, so like during this so in this portion of the story, some bad stuff happened to Denia previously, and she is dying. She has like 2 weeks to live. She gets a day out with the main character Rover because the authorities are a little suspect of her because she's affiliated with some bad people, not of her own choosing. And during her day out, she gets to hang out with her best friend Sigrika, who doesn't know who she is and what she's done. She's kind of like she was Denia was planted to manipulate Sigrika, but became friends with her because. And in the crux of the meeting, like, it's very clear that Sigrika basically states that she can tell something's wrong, that Denia is not telling her everything. And the two have a really rough padding where, like, Sigrika ends up walking away, knowing that basically having figured out that Denia is going to die because she was in the hospital previously. But Denia doesn't tell her. And it's really rough. And as I was watching it, you know, I write up all the story stuff for the site and stuff, and I'm watching it, and it was extremely emotional, and I thought it was really well done. But for a moment, it kind of angered me because Denia is like, there's even a moment where like Denia takes a step as Sigrika's walking off, and you're like, oh, she's gonna call out to her, she's gonna come clean, and everything's gonna be, and then she doesn't. She's just like, go take care of those files, and it's like, what are you doing? And it just and that really like got me thinking about it, and like, about all the ways in which, like, was it a bad ending? Was it a good ending? And, like, the fact that all Denia had ever done really was lie. So, of course, she's going to lie in the most upsetting situation. It's the only, you know, the whole hammer and nail situation and stuff. And it ended up hitting really hard. And it just got me thinking about, you know, like, will people like it? Will they be, because upset, especially in this day and age where so much of the art that we get is so consumer based, and they want to appeal to as broad an audience as possible, which generally means happy endings, or at least endings. If it is a sad ending, it's sad because the villain did something bad, not because the person you're rooting for didn't do what you want them to. So that just kind of got my brain going and seemed like
Yeah, and
something worth.
I think it's a valid question, because I think the way that I wrote it down in the notes is like, happy endings can be bad endings, and sad endings can be good endings. Like, though, like happy and good are not always the same in storytelling.
Absolutely.
And the inverse, like sad endings are not always bad endings, but there is this question of like people watch things and are like, well, that's not what I would have done, or that didn't make
Done.
any sense, or why. And sometimes those complaints are valid.
No,
We've like,
absolutely.
I mean, easiest not to dunk on Game of Thrones, because like God knows it's happened enough. But the whole like, oh,
I will happily dunk on Game of Thrones.
she forgot about the Iron Fleet, and it's like, what do you mean she forgot about the Iron Fleet? Like,
Wait.
that is a bad character choice. That's a good thing to get frustrated with. There are other character choices. I mean, I get Game of Thrones spoilers. I like, let's just lay into it. Jaime Lannister going back. What the hell was that? Like there are like character choices where like that are valid to criticize, where it's like, that didn't make sense, that's out of step, that you didn't have the logical build up for this, for that to be what happened next. But then there are times where it's like, oh, that character did a really frustrating thing, but also it was the right thing for the moment, like for the
It's the thing
story,
they
for what we're
should have
trying to
done.
for what we're trying to tell.
Something in character.
Yeah, it's a And it's funny because I feel like that is what is good storytelling, is when your characters are believable people. And that's also where this gets a little messy, because I think that there's you want your character to be a believable person, but you also need them to make choices that move the story forward. So like in and this is debatable. I don't know that I love this trope. In a horror movie, you need people to have a little bit not self-preservation, like just a little bit. I'm gonna make a bad choice. I'm gonna go investigate the noise.
Keyword being a little bit, and not like what the pa those parents were doing in Lee Cronin's Mummy. You can check out my review on
That's fair. Yeah, there's a
Bubwide,
moronic way to do it, but
though. Yes.
because yeah, because I do think this whole conversation, like, yes, happy endings, sad endings are like that's where my mind immediately went, Charles, when you would pitch this. But like, you're right, it extends to character agency. And I think with horror specifically, I think it's like an old Tumblr post that someone made about they were playing a tabletop game with their friends, and what the friends didn't know is that it was Alien. They did not know that they were in a sci-fi horror story. And so they basically made every classic mistake. And the kind of the big lesson is like, characters don't know what genre they're in. So like, if you're watching a rom-com and people have a misunderstanding and refuse to talk about it, they don't know they're in a rom-com. Like, is that a frustrating trope? And is it, not great of like, oh, like this bad thing happened, and instead of explaining, you just shout, wait, no, I can explain, while the other person leaves? Like, yes, that's bad writing, but like, again, that character doesn't know that they're in a rom-com and that like they're supposed to win the day or whatever. And so they, lean into the trope. But that, like, that dramatic irony, like the audience knowing something that the character doesn't know, that's, you gotta deal with that. You gotta
Yeah.
live with that. Again, Dany forgetting about the Iron Fleet. She knew about the Iron Fleet. There is no reason for her to have forgotten. Now, if we were the only ones who knew about the Iron Fleet, that would be very different. Like
Yeah.
that would be like, oh yeah, you had no way of knowing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it really
But
also just depends on what the story is actually trying to say. It's about
yes.
staying in character, it's about having these characters make relatively logical decisions balanced with their own flaws and what they're supposed to learn and how they interact with the world they're in, but also what is, I mean, ultimately it should be characters driving story, but still that
Yeah.
story should have some sort of message to impart. And that ending of Game of Thrones, it was literally just like the Loki gif of nothing matters. Like all this time and investment we had placed into these characters, into these dynamics, into worrying about the witch, the not the Witch King, sorry, the Winter King. What was the name of
The White
the
Walkers,
White
the
Walkers? Thank you,
yeah.
thank you. You see, I've been trying to scrub it from my memory already. It's just that I've always said this, since the end of Game of Thrones, and to be honest, I also haven't read the books. I feel bad for that. There's just too much else to read, and I'm also like, the thing is, I love Daenerys, and I don't want to read her going that direction as well. I refuse to accept that ending. But the thing is, like, I've always thought that Game of Thrones, this story in and of itself, outside of House of the Dragon or the other spinoffs, it has all these great characters and dynamics, but ultimately, what is it trying to say with all of them? What is the message that's being imparted? Like, is it just like a doomed cycle of history that, one king or queen is going to outtake another and it's just pointless? But the thing is, we are still so compelled by these characters. It's not simply like we want to see someone win. We want to see. That's why, like, so many of us love Daenerys. Like, yes, like many critiques to be had about her. Yes, she is functionally a colonizer and all of that. But, like, for the story and what we thought we were getting, we thought, oh, here's a hero we can root for, someone who wants to redeem her family's legacy and break the wheel of oppression that's on Westeros, who genuinely cares despite her missteps. But with such a truncated last arc, we got that. And you mentioned Jaime Lannister. What was his growth supposed to be? Like, we're just throwing it all out the window, and then it's just going to collapse on him and just, oh, full spoilers, collapse on him and Cersei in the a castle. Like, I think the only character in Game of Thrones who had a satisfying ending was Sansa, becoming Queen of the North. Like, she had been through so much, and she persevered. She rose to the top through her own guile and wit. And that was wonderful to see, like, again, despite like the horrific things that had happened to her. But that's the only character for which we have a satisfying ending. And I still don't understand what the point of the story was meant to be.
Yeah, it was almost it almost turned it into like a slice of life in that it was like, yeah, it just happened and then ended. I think as you're talking, something I realized is the reason that the Jaime Lannister ending is so frustrating to me is that it is sitcom writing applied to a drama. Where in sitcoms, it's like pretty well established. A sitcom is 23 minutes where you get into a situation and then you set things back to zero by the end of the episode. Like, yes, like a newer sitcoms experiment more with like longer arcs and multi-episode stuff. But if you go back to like 70s, 80s, 90s, even 2000 sitcoms, a lot of them, it's about getting back to zero. And so for them to be like, hey, we've been giving him this whole situation of character growth, and then we're going to reset him to zero right at the last minute. And especially because, granted, I only watched the finale the one time, or season eight the one time. I don't remember him like going back to his sister and being like, I learned something, or I'm different, or we were mistaken, or we did. He just goes back. And it's
Just
just a reason.
defaults.
And yeah, so
Just
again,
completely defaults.
there are times where it's valid to criticize because that was really bad writing. I think it's more when you get people who are in the like, that didn't make like it didn't make sense that they would do that because that's not what I would have done.
I would have done, or that's not what my headcanon was. That's not how I saw the
Oh
story
man.
going. You know, like we, especially, I mean, like I think another thing that's like really dicey is that oftentimes can contribute to what you guys are talking about is how much people love to dissect everything in lore, and especially with longer running stuff, where you know people start saying, "Oh, this thing happened, that thing happened." Then you know, 2 years later, "Oh, someone said the exact same thing. They must be in cahoots." And it's like, no, it's a
That's just
random
a
line.
phrase.
Like, it's just a random line. What are you talking about? And then it doesn't happen, and it becomes, and like you said, it can become a thing where it's just like, "Oh my gosh." But yeah, no, it is really tough, especially since, you know, obviously what someone should or shouldn't do is always so colored by our own experiences, our own life lessons. So you're always going to get different answers to that. But it is definitely, and I really like that you brought up like endings as when it comes to like sensible and non, because like we were having a conversation in the But Why Though Discord the other day. Somebody brought up Spielberg, and you mentioning endings made me think of, do you ever see his War of the Worlds?
I didn't actually.
Is that the one
Most
with Tom
forced,
Cruise?
yes, most forced happy ending ever. His son gets
Oh
like
yeah, I heard that.
engulfed by a wall of fire like in the first act of the movie, and then at the end he's just there, and it's
Oh,
like,
that's
I
bad.
need a
Oh.
flashback. I need something to explain how he did not get barbecued.
Right? Like there's
And
like a I don't need everything spelled out for me, but this is enough
but
of a
this,
break with
yeah,
reality
like
that you
this is
needed
a,
to talk about
yeah,
it.
unless you're gonna
Yeah.
reveal that he's half Kryptonian or something. I don't know how he survived that.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, there's definitely
It,
the
well,
there are
there's got to be
definitely
a lore
times.
video for that, like you're saying. The other day I saw a pretty sharp criticism online that was like, men do write fan fiction. They just film it and upload it as a half-hour lore video or
Lore
theory
video
video.
or
And I was like, oh, that's brutal. But that is, yeah, like that, like what is fan theory and lore videos other
then
than fan fiction?
yeah, unless
But you raise a good point of like there are things like that where, because that's also one where it's not even a character choice that doesn't make sense, it's just a story beat that is like, we're gonna go for the happy ending, but we're not gonna explain how this child who we saw get engulfed in flames is
Flames is
fine.
like actually alive, and you're just like, there is just a, like, did someone just decide at the end we don't know how to do this? So
Oh yeah.
ta-da.
And it's like you
That
like,
lapse in logic.
because what they could have done that would have been a technically like, here actually this is something that I do love, is the technically happy ending where it is ultimately like the best thing that could have happened, or the best ending, given what occurred, and it still acknowledges and respects everything that occurred. And I think my go-to example for this is, have you all seen or read The Perks of Being a Wallflower?
I have seen it,
I've
yes.
heard of
One of
it.
my favorite movies of all time.
Okay. So, Suara, a little bit of spoilers. You can pop your
That's
headphones out
okay.
if you want.
Okay.
So, in my head, it is a happy movie. I have shown it
Yes.
to friends who are like, this is depressing
You
because
see.
most of the movie is watching this kid who, at the start of the movie, He has no friends. He's starting high school, and his best friend from middle school killed himself last year. That's square one. And then it is him getting friends and learning about himself, but then also being called out on the fact that it's like, you're our friend, but you're kind of like a shell of a person. Like, you're just whatever you think we want you to be. You don't have agency. And then it escalates more, and he has like a complete mental break and ends up in a hospital after trying to kill himself. And you're like, oh, this is a lot. Like, this is a very intense, sad thing. But at the end of it, it's like him coming through the other side alive, and he
Yeah.
has these friends that he made. And so I'm like, oh, in my head, this is a happy movie. It's not a happy experience.
You know,
Um,
so sorry, but you know what, like, other story follows that gen very general beat that we all love? Lord of the Rings.
oh
Like,
yeah, it's just somebody being traumatized for the
yes.
whole trilogy.
Like, I have like my copy of Lord of the Rings right here since I was a kid. Like, yeah, I want to get this like rebound. It's like
I say
my
it looks pretty
precious.
worn.
Yes. So the thing is, yeah, reading this as a kid, reading this when I was like 12, 13 years old, was the most depressing shit. Like, specifically
Yeah.
Frodo and Sam. You know, they're the crux on which the entire story relies upon. If they fail, then Middle-earth is effed. So reading that as a kid, I was like internalizing, like, oh no, I don't think they're gonna make it. I don't see how they're gonna make it. Even when with Gollum and getting through like Cirith Ungol and all of that, like the way Tolkien writes it, he's drawing so much from his own trauma in World War I and applying that to Frodo and Sam as well as the other characters, but they persevere and make it through. That ending, as well as the ending of Perks of Being a Wallflower, those endings are earned. And yes, they are both like I haven't seen Perks of Being a Wallflower yet, but yeah, Alex, to me that sounds like a happy ending. But the key thing that's even more important than that is that it's an earned ending. Game of
Yes.
Thrones, again, like, you know, ending in like so much chaos and whatnot, and like happy for some, horrible for others, and you know, for many, including myself, it's like a sad ending. A sad ending for Daenerys specifically that feels unearned. That's this, whatever the ending of a story is, it has to put out the building blocks and the logic that within the story for it to have its ending. And
I feel like
you
they
can, yeah.
with Game of Thrones, they kind of leaned on the whole like, well, this just is how the Targaryens are.
Yeah, which is
And
bullshit. Yeah.
it was like, okay, like you're telling me that, but you have not quite shown that to me with her for most of this show. You really like
Exactly.
you tried
Yeah.
to speed run that insanity in the last two seasons, season and a half, and it's like that's where that one didn't work. But I think also there is going to like the broader conversation of like, you know, audiences like watching, projecting, you know, this is what I would have done. Like with her, there is, if we're going to say that there is some sort of like hereditary insanity in the Targaryen line, then she would have never done what you would have done because you're not a Targaryen.
Right.
Like that's where it also gets complicated, and where this like Charles was saying, of like things being commodified, lowest denominator, let's make the audiences happy so they spend money. We got to sell at least 10,000 more shirts that say I drink and know things. So like work that guy in. And it's like this, that was like a weird moment where they kind of like threw that all out the window in a weird way that was very off-putting to people.
No. And
Um,
again, it's simply
oh.
that it wasn't earned. They need more
Yeah.
time to develop that storyline. It's like Benioff and Weiss just rushed the end of Game of Thrones so they could direct a Star Wars, which they never
And then
ended up
that
doing
didn't
anyway, because
happen.
Star Wars, as well as a cluster F. And like, I'm just saying, you know, like, I, after episode 9, I basically like gave up most of my Star Wars fandom because, again, it's that Loki gif of nothing matters, like investment in one storyline or another. And whatever you prefer about Last Jedi, or J.J. Abrams' vision, whatever, like, all the power to you, but have like a lo logical, cohesive trilogy. It's like, by the way, I just want to say, like, in Disney Plus, I saw a metric of Disney Plus's top 10. It was actually, shout out to Matt who sent this to me, to us in the Discord. Of the top 10 Star Wars properties, none of them are the sequel trilogy films. because
That
like,
doesn't surprise me.
yeah, because audiences, both young and old, etc., see this as like now a cynical cash grab that says nothing. Ultimately says nothing, because nothing in the story is actually earned. Because all about
Definitely.
money and so cynical. Sorry, I just had to
Oh
rant
no,
about
no, no,
another
no. You're
franchise.
totally right.
No,
Like I 'cause
fine.
I think what we've hit on is that there is a very clear type of frustrating moment in media where the frustration like it lessens the media, it disappoints the audience. But what I'm thinking too now is on the flip side of that, going back to kind of Charles' original premise, is like, where has a decision in a movie disappointed you in a way that made it better? That you were like, oh, that was the right thing, even though I'm sad about it.
That is a good question.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I know
Right.
there are examples of it. I'm just trying to think.
I was not expecting that. But while we wrap our brains around that, I did want to really quickly, just because since you did bring up Perks of Being a
Oh, yeah.
Wallflower, like I said, one of my all-time favorite movies, partly because of the fact that I, growing up, was very shy, did not have a lot of friends, had some issues with suicide, unfortunately. And that movie, like you said, to me, that is a very the ending, the ultimate ending of that movie is extremely uplifting. But for me, it was because of the fact that, like, I started to watch it because some friends recommended it, and I saw, up, oh, here's the shy kid. He's meeting the two outgoing upperclassmen. They're gonna take him under his wing. He's gonna blossom, and by the end of the movie, he's going to be outgoing, and he's gonna be the life of the party when they leave, and he's gonna take their spot. But instead, at the end of the movie, he's going to be okay, but he's still him. He still has his problems. He is the human being that we met, but he's more stable now. He's processed. He understands, but he's still him.
You raise a
And
really good point that, yeah, they kind of like in a lesser story, it would be about getting him to come out of his shell and
it
be
would be
this like
about
cool, exciting
fixing him.
person. And they're just like, no, we like you because you're you, not
You.
because, you know. And
And
that's even a whole thing where that they talk to him about in the story of like, we like that you like the things that we like, and we like that you care about us, but like ultimately you do still need to be your own person.
listen, yeah.
And like you're saying, like at the end of the movie, like he has now discovered who that person is, and it's not just some clone of them.
And it's not someone who's just outgoing and happy. He's not fixed. He's still him, and he is enough. And that's a great thing. So like, I just wanted, 'cause like, and that was something that did, like, that was a point where like part of me expected again for the happier ending, for the perfect ending, for the one where he's just good and everything's great. But I got something that was, some people might say less than that, but because it was earned, as Suara was talking about, and it did make sense for his character and made it more real, it also made it more effective, because I could see myself coming, like, because I went through the same thing where I met some great teachers, did make some friends in high school, and by the end, I was still shy, still anxious, still terrible at doing it, but I was better, and I was still me. So, like, that allowed it to, even though some people may say it was a more flawed ending, it was still a more impactful one for its
I thought it
flaw.
was the more realistic ending.
Absolutely.
Also, if you want a really cool experience, I recommend this to both of you. I recommend this to people listening at home. Go pick up a copy of Perks of Being a Wallflower. Don't start it. Wait until, because it's the whole thing is epistolary. It's all told in letters. Read the first letter on the day that it's dated, and then set a reminder on your phone for when the next chapter is. And it takes you like a whole year to, the book is like less than 200 pages, but it will take you like a whole year to read the book this way. But it gives a really interesting perspective where you're seeing like when he, like the, when you see how frequently he's writing the letters, or when it's like, oh, I haven't picked this book up in like 2 months. Like, is he all right? Like, it makes it a much more immersive reading experience. It makes it really interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, I did it once a few years ago, and at this point, probably a decade ago because time's an illusion. But yeah, I did it once and I was like, oh, that actually was really cool and really interesting. Like, there's nothing wrong with just reading the book through and like reading the dates and locking it in your head. But because the whole thing is framed as him writing a letter to someone anonymously, making yourself that recipient, and where you're like, oh, I have to go read this letter, it came in today, is just like a cool, weird way to do it. And I do recommend it. But back to this. I've been trying to think about the whole like choices where you are let down by it, but it makes for the more emotional,
Yeah.
more impactful thing. I'm gonna say, and this is a wild pull, and I don't know if you guys are gonna know what I'm talking about. The series finale of Dinosaurs.
I know
Oh my
exactly what you're
God.
talking about. Yeah.
The Holy
series finale of Dinosaurs
crap.
is a bummer. It
Yeah.
ends with the We Say So Corporation that Earl Sinclair works for, kind of accidentally starting the Ice Age and killing everyone off. And they don't really hide that that's what's going to happen to every character on the show. Like, it doesn't show them freezing to death, but it shows them all bundled up and like really cold. And then the baby being like, "Where are we going to go?" And they're like, "There is nowhere to go."
It's
So,
not like we're just
like,
gonna disappear. We've ruled the
yeah.
world
And
for
so,
65 million years. We're not gonna go
exactly.
vanish.
Yeah, and so you're watching it and you're like, I'm so disappointed with all the character choices. I'm really saddened by this story, but it made it a better story. Like that specific episode, I should say. That whether or not ending a sitcom with the apocalypse is appropriate, that's a whole other conversation. But I thought it was a really interesting swing, especially in the early 90s.
It is an incredible, like that. Yeah, I mean, that is probably one of the most powerful finales I've ever seen. Even though, like, I went back at one point when, like, everything was coming to DVD, I picked up the first season of that and watched it. And that show was a lot more than just a sitcom. They
Oh yeah,
did
it was a good
there's like
show.
morality to, like, everything was talking about something important. But yeah, no, that was really great. And one, I can't believe that. It took me this long to think of it. I don't know if I think you probably have, Alex, but the ending to Cowboy Bebop.
Oh yeah. Oh.
Or any number of
Definitely.
episodes of Cowboy Bebop where it's like, no,
Cowboy
don't do
Bebop.
that.
Spike as a character is a study in doing the wrong thing, but making the episode better for it.
For it.
Or not
Like,
even,
it's
I
just
won't
like,
even say the wrong thing. I don't even want to moralize the decisions. Doing the frustrating thing for the viewer.
thing. Why would you do that? Don't do that. It's over.
Yeah.
She's not coming back. Don't throw your life away.
And because I think part of this too, like what something that I put in the notes is like there is an argument for like there's no movie, there's no story if people only make the right choice. Or it's a much
Oh,
harder
yeah.
story to tell. To tell a compelling story where everyone makes good, right choices and communicates clearly and is understood and, you know.
Well, that's why, like, going back, but in a very different way to Game of Thrones, when I first experienced the stories, I read the books and I was talking with a friend about them, and we were talking about Ned's death at the end of book one, and he was like, "Well, Ned had to die," and I'm like, "Why?" He's like, "'Cause he only does the right thing." He's
Right.
always right. If he doesn't die, he just does everything right and wins the day.
He just speed runs
So
the
he has to,
series.
yeah, he either beats everyone or he dies. And
And
it's like, oh, you're right. He does. That character can't exist because he's just gonna fix everything. Oh shit, you're right. So yeah,
well,
no
well, does it
confidence.
in
There's the other thing
Westeros?
about it's the other thing about Ned though. Like he makes all the right decisions within the present. But at the very least, you know, from the beginning, we're led to believe that he's made mistakes in his past that he's trying to make up for, and those don't get resolved until much later on in the series, which still makes him an interesting character. But again, it's because he did wrong in the past. But you're right, Charles. Like, you know, within the present of like, you know, all the backstabbing and literal Game of Thrones that's going on, like such a morally righteous character who could only have imparted his lessons onto his children who try to like, you know, make better to varying degrees of success. It really like just shows, yeah, you know, you need a character with like making some sort of mistake with some sort of
Faith.
conflict. When we think about his son, specifically Robb Stark, I was thinking like in terms of ending, like one ending within Game of Thrones, obviously the infamous Red Wedding. I guess like that's, I always found that very interesting to me because like, yes, it is shocking. Yes, it sort of seemingly comes out of nowhere, but it is also something very satisfying. It is also something very artfully done in all of its violence because Rob, you know, he made the mistake of like, you know, he decided he's going to marry for love instead of like adhering to this agreement with the Freys. But that was satisfying because it showed the sheer brutality even further of Martin's world. Like it had a specific point, and that the good guy trying to strive to be noble like wouldn't succeed here and would like suffer severe retribution for it. Like the logical pieces were laid out in such a way that made sense. And I, both in the show and certainly the book, like that is a satisfying ending for Robb Stark and seemingly his mother. Different endings, like you know, for her, like in the books, where spoilers, huge spoilers, she's resurrected as Lady Stoneheart versus the show where she's just dead. And but even so, both are like, I mean, I don't know how Lady Stoneheart's gonna end in the books, like, I don't know if we'll ever
No
know
one
if
will.
George R. R. Martin finishes the books.
Very true.
But yeah, it's that is something that's artfully done and tragic, and yeah, that actually has a point. It's an earned and earned sad ending.
And well, I think too, a lot of this is, I mean, like going back to the example of like Ned Stark, is the idea of there when you have people doing the quote unquote right thing or going for the happy ending, you ultimately kind of weaken the message or the story in a way that's not satisfying, or that makes it just a less enjoyable piece of media in general. Like you guys were saying, of, well, if we keep him around, he's just going to do right things and he's going to influence things and kind of keep it on track. And it's like, okay, is that as fun? And is that what George R. R. Martin is trying to communicate about like power and the people who seek it? Or is it more important that he's not a part of it? Because also that's more realistic. And because also I think specifically when we're talking about people doing smart things or dumb things, people are kind of dumb, like just in general. So the idea that someone's always going to do, say, act right doesn't work. And I think too, like there is something to happy endings also just can kind of fundamentally change what, like, not even what's being said, but change the whole tone of everything. I think the example that comes to mind for me is The Descent. I don't know if you all are familiar with that one.
I am not.
So spoilers for The Descent. It is a horror movie about a group of women who go cave diving and they get lost in the cave and they get attacked by monsters.
Oh, okay.
Now, there are two endings to The Descent. In the American ending, she gets out of the cave and it's, you know, everyone else is dead, but she survived. She made it. It's good. In the original ending, in I think the European ending, she gets out of the cave and she survived and everyone else died and she's good. And then she wakes up and she is still in the cave. It's
Damn.
it, night and day difference in terms of like the feeling that you end that movie with. And so yeah, it's this thing that I, like where again it's this audience expectation of like, are we looking for these people to survive? Because that specifically too, I think is a really fun subversion of the final girl trope, where it's like, yeah, we gave you a final girl. She survived this incident, this, you know, day or whatever, but that doesn't mean she made it out.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page and on the editing of the film. The 4th of August 2006 issue of Entertainment Weekly reported that the ending was trimmed because American viewers did not like its quote uber hopeless finale.
Because it's bleak, it's so dark.
But it also speaks to the question, sorry, like of can American audiences handle or do we have to be spoon-fed happy
Yeah,
endings or semi-happy endings all the time?
I think
I
we've been getting
mean
better about eating our vegetables.
I think I mean I think I think it I think there are definitely some very highly thought of movies that do not have happy endings for sure. I think a lot of it also depends. I mean, like part of it depends on like what fits for the story. I also know that like as someone who again only casual in horror, I had a roommate at one point that was big into horror, watched all the ghost spooky sort of movies. And I got so tired for a while there where it seemed like the point was they're all going to die. There isn't going to be a survivor. There isn't going to be someone who manages to lock the demon away. At the end of the movie, the thing happens and everyone dies, the camera falls, and it's like, oh, it was terrible. And it's like, well, then why did I watch this movie if everyone's just going to die? What's the point? Like,
Well, and that's also, I mean, that's where slashers get interesting, where it's like the fun of the movie is the kills and not necessarily
but
not
you still.
necessarily a lesson. But I agree where it's like, well, what's the point of watching all these people die?
Kills, like I mean, yeah, I mean, like I mean, like part of the fun thing the first time I watched Deep Blue Sea was how the Sharks managed to get at people. I was still
That's
happy
true.
that a
That's a
couple of
great
people got
example.
out, but it was still fun. Who's gonna get what? But so yeah, I mean, it definitely is a But yeah, I mean, like, I think that's the big thing, as well as like saying, like, bringing that up of, the ending needs to fit the tone. We've all seen super dour movies that then have that upbeat, and you're like, wait, for real? I mean,
Where
like,
it feels like tacked on after the end.
an example that I feel like some people would go to, I don't fully agree with it, except for how it's built up to, but like Neon Genesis Evangelion. Very depressing show. Last two episodes, Shinji has a revelation. He's good. We're all happy again. Very truncated version of it, but and like not earned, I think, the best two episodes of that series. But it does have that very like everything's miserable. Up, oh, now we're good. So like, yeah, there's definitely those sorts of jarring endings of like the whole War of the Worlds thing I mentioned earlier, where it's like, wait, how are we suddenly happy? Everyone was dying 5 minutes ago. But yeah, so it definitely it you have to find something that fits the narrative.
You know what ending I was just reminded of? I think it was discussed on the show before. The Mist.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, just so bleak, but
That's let's here
very
do you,
much
let's
fitting with.
Charles, do you mind if we spoil this one?
I've seen The Mist.
Oh, okay, yeah. So,
I've seen The
Sora, do you
Mist.
want to explain the ending of The Mist?
Oh, man. I actually don't think I could do it. Could you do it, Alex? I'm sorry.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but it basically, so the whole idea is that there's this mist that kills you if it touches you. That's the premise. And the end of the movie is this guy is like in a car with his family and is like, we're trapped, we're stuck, like we're gonna die, we can't get out. And so he kills his whole family, and then before he can kill himself, the mist clears, right? That's basically
Well,
it.
the
The
Mist
U.S.
that's
Army
clearing,
comes
and like
in.
the National Guard comes walking through, and he just murdered his family. Yes. Yeah.
And so it's like that's one where it's again, sometimes the bleakness is the point. Sometimes
That.
sitting with discomfort is the point. And making yourself ask, like, well, that movie is such a hypothetical that you can ask yourself, what would I do? Because you're never going to actually be faced with that
That,
scenario.
but also like at as the culmination of what they were going through, they were stuck in a department store with a bunch of people, including like a crazed religious lunatic who was like convincing everyone to join her cult and like attack like the dad and son and like other quote unquote non-believers. And they are able to overcome that, but then they were like, okay, we have to get out of here. Let's get in this car, and the car runs out of gas and it just seems hopeless. And so that moment where like it seems like it'd be okay, but obviously what you described happens, Alex. And I guess, like, again, that's just like a sort of logic falling into play in this story of, like what human beings will do when pressed so traumatically hard in these sort of situations. And that gives you something to think about. It leaves you with a huge impression and can be a cautionary tale. Like, I see like these sorts of endings as cautionary tales of what not to do, and we need those just as much as happy endings. So yeah, that's just it's just powerful storytelling, which Stephen King is like obviously want to do.
And it's interesting that you bring that one up, because like it is like it feels like on in some very broad spectrums, it feels like the same thing, like the Wuthering Waves scenario that I brought up at the start of the story, where someone does something that you're like, oh, that's not what I want you to do, but okay, it works out. But at the same time, and while I understand why people feel differently, I vehemently hate that ending. I despise that ending of that story. I get why it's there. I understand why other people like it, but I'm just like, nope, you went too far. I don't like it. Again, I feel like, what was the point of this movie? Literally everyone died, other than this one guy who's probably got at most hours before he's dead too.
Well, so I
Because,
mean,
wait,
that's
sorry,
the
you're
other
talking
thing
about
is,
The Mist,
yeah,
Charles?
The Mist. Like, I was just like, nope, this is too much. I don't like this. This isn't good. Even though, like, I know quantifiably, I get why people would argue and say it is good. I get it. But I'm just like, nope.
Well, I mean, really, the thing that we've been dancing around this whole time and not naming is tragedy, and the idea that a tragic ending can be a satisfying ending and a good ending.
Yes,
And
absolutely.
I think it's the way that, because our relationship with movies, I think, has increasingly become like one of projection of theory videos and discourse and analyzing and fandoms and subreddits and yada yada yada, where it, to the point where people like, oh, it honestly feels like some people think that they should have input on the story. And for me, it's like you shouldn't. Like, if a movie is well received, it should be because what it did resonated with you, not because it twisted itself into what it thought you would like.
Yeah,
Because
exactly.
I think when it is when movies start to twist themselves to audience expectations, that's where it gets bad.
Absolutely.
So going back to very early on when I was talking about Backrooms, where it was not a movie that was about a wiki about a made up space, and it was instead just a new vision of a made up space, and it was stronger for it. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I feel like where I'm at is just that for me, I'm very open to being frustrated by characters. I think that's different than being frustrated by the media itself,
The
if that
plot
makes
or
sense.
something. By the way,
Yeah.
I have another example.
Yes.
Grave of the Fireflies.
I mean that's one of those movies that is on the list of that if you ask somebody what's a movie you watched once and will never watch again, that's one that comes up. Because again, it's just bleak, it's just sad.
But still, like, with a tinge of hope, sort
Yeah,
of,
well,
like,
yeah. And I
like.
think that's the question is it's we have so weighted film and storytelling, books, movies, comics, whatever, as a means of escape that I think there are, I'm not going to say everyone, I'm going to say culturally, I think we went through a real moment where that was kind of like what we wanted out of things. I think that there's always been people who are like, no, it should make you feel something and make you think. But I think that we put such a weight on it of being like, this is how I escape, that when something confronts you and is like, there is no escape, like this is, you're going to watch this thinking it's an animated kids movie, and then you're just going to get gut punched for 2 hours. Not one time, just repeatedly. It's just going to suck. It's just going to be uncomfortable.
And in that, it has such a, it is like very explicitly, as most Studio Ghibli films are, an anti-war film. This is the reality of war, especially wars that America wages across. I mean, obviously this is in the context of World War II, and like obviously the Axis was like horrific and evil, absolutely. But still, even those citizens and what they suffer through, this is the reality of war, you know? So.
Oh, another good example. I keep looking over at my movie shelves and trying to find anything that jumps out at me, and I this one's like right on top, and I don't know how I didn't get to it sooner. Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park is full of bad human choices, from the very get-go of like, what if we resurrect dinosaurs? What if we just like trust that we did all the right stuff? What if we splice in DNA from other animals and don't question what it might do to these ones? Like, that is a movie where the bad choices are frustrating from dramatic irony. Like, I know it's going to go poorly that you use those frog genes or whatever. But it makes the movie so good to watch people make those choices and take those risks.
I'm
So
gonna turn
watch
off. I've still not watched Jurassic Park all the way through. I've only seen scenes from it. I
Oh, it's
know.
so good. I love it.
Yeah.
I feel like the first one is the only one that I would like revisit frequently out of the entire franchise, but it's good. But it is a thing of like these are just people making bad choices, like in terms of what made Jurassic Park as a
Yes.
place.
And well, I mean, and it's also I think that it's also helped because the story gives it the context that, you know, like all these, like it's the early 90s, it's the era when, you know, when the opening era of, you know, we have tech solves everything, we can do everything, we'll fix it, we'll just make it better. And it's like, no, not necessarily, especially when you can't make it better when the core problem was one of your greedy workers shut down your fences. Like, that's just a human thing. But
Also, like Thor GIF of does it though regarding technology and where we
well,
are
no,
right
absolutely,
now.
absolutely. But I mean, like,
But
but
also,
that was
like,
a very 90s sentiment.
yes, very. I have to say, like, I think one of the reasons I haven't just sat down and watched the originals because there have been so many sequels. I've actually, and regrettably, have only seen Jurassic World all the way through. I was like, oh, this might be interesting. Obviously, it was a shit movie. So maybe that's that retroactively started. When I again, I should go back and actually watch Jurassic Park all the way through. I think I watched like maybe half of it when I was a kid or something at someone's house or something. The thing is, the point of the story is like of Jurassic Park is like y'all should not be doing all these experiments with these dinosaurs and cloning them and seeing the problems. But again, it's a franchise. They keep doing it over and
Yeah.
over and
They
over. It's
refuse
like,
to
no
tell the
more,
movie
because,
if you
like,
don't.
what is the point of this story
Well, and
anymore?
actually, so
I
that's a
just.
good example where the story, where the character choices, while initially very good, eventually became frustrating for me in a way where it's like the media is frustrating to me because the lesson of every movie has been the hubris
Don't
of
do this.
man. And then every movie just has a sequel, and
Because they
it's
keep
like, and no
doing
one ever learns
it.
anything. And I would
Well.
say that's maybe my one character thing that I do is, again, like sitcoms, everything goes back to zero, slashers, everyone dies, whatever. But I do feel like I get frustrated when a character refuses to learn anything. And Jurassic Park as a franchise is about refusing to learn anything. And so I think that's also part of why I'm good with just the first one.
Yeah, fair
But yeah, I
enough.
don't know. I think where I'm at with all the, with this conversation is just like there is space for like for frustration in media, and it's important to make space for that frustration for yourself too, and like
And
to sit
yeah,
with
I
it,
mean,
process it, and be
yeah.
like, well, why did that annoy me? Or like, do I actually disagree with what they did, or am I maybe mad that I don't disagree with what they did?
Because I thought I liked the, I thought I was rooting for the good guy, and then they
Yeah.
did that.
Or
Like,
there's probably people who were watching The Mist who were like, yeah, shit, I don't blame him. Like, I get
yeah,
why
for
he made
sure.
that choice in the moment. And then you have to be like, I just agreed with someone killing their family. And like, now you have to ask questions about
About
yourself. Like,
yourself. Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, this variety of endings shows the complexity of human nature and having,
Yeah.
like, cinema is the ultimate reflection, you know, that we can see visually of ourselves and delve into these questions and think about these deep concepts and imagine how it might play out. So we can't be afraid of, you know, a sad or tragic ending for being sad and tragic. It all depends on whether the story has a point to say. It's funny, like, I think before this conversation, I thought of myself like, oh, I'm typically a happy endings kind of guy, but no, I love all kinds of endings. I care about meaningful endings. I care about a story actually having that message to impart and just actually working for it. Because I think, like, so many stories, especially like in the over franchising that we're seeing across so many properties right now, just doesn't work for it or leaves an ending open-ended. I think this is especially a problem with the MCU, not just in recent years, but always. And ultimately, like, it's like, again, I'm gonna capitalism is the problem where you want to over franchise this by not giving a fully satisfying ending or like leaving that lingering thread and you don't get satisfaction out of a story. Like, I realize, like, I've never truly been satisfied by an MCU film, except maybe Black Panther, and yeah, not never truly satisfied at the ending of an MCU film. I think basically ever.
Fair. I'm like, do I have additional thoughts or am I tapped out? This has been a very good conversation. Now I'm like, I want to go watch sad, frustrating movies because we're out of time.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyone else have closing thoughts or should we just wrap it up and get out of here?
I'm good.
All
It's a
right,
great
let's do it.
conversation.
Yeah, that no, honestly, thank you. Again, I'm just gonna go watch sad bummer movies and feel things and think
Yeah,
about the world. But yeah, that does it for this week. But if you listening at home want more, we do have it. But Why Though is on Blue Sky at buttwhytho.net, and you can subscribe to our newsletter, which is free, or donate, which is money, by going to buttwhytho.net/support. Both of those actions go towards keeping the site running, paying our writers, making the content you enjoy. So either of them, if you can do it, please do. We greatly appreciate it. Swara, Charles, thank you so much for joining me, making me think about sad movies, making me think about being frustrated, making me want to be frustrated. And thank you at home for listening. We'll see you next time.